Welcome to the Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. During our fireside chat, I sat with Mallory Whitman, the marketing manager from Slumber Pod, to talk all things influencer marketing. We learned about their Slumber Pod influencer marketing program and dug into how they leverage promo codes with their influencers to help achieve seven-figure revenue numbers. That's right, I didn't stutter, seven figures. If you're interested in listening to the complete Slumber Pod influencer marketing story, you can visit the live events section of our website, grin.co. That's grin.co. Now in this podcast, Mallory shares her insights and expertise to help answer all those questions we didn't get to during the live Q&A. And she spares no details, guys, so buckle up. Put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for a little influencer marketing Q&A with Mallory from Slumber Pods. Welcome back, Mallory. This is the Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers, moving it to the Grin Gets Real podcast. So I'm really excited to have you back on here. And let's just dive into the questions that we didn't get answered. You ready?
Perfect.
All right.
I'm ready.
Do you ever work with influencers that have a more traditional website instead of an Instagram or Facebook?
We do. Yeah. It's not common. The bulk of our influencers have a social media presence, but I'm thinking of one in particular who just has a blog. He has, and it's a dad too, which is surprising, you know, considering who we typically work with, but he just has a blog. He has literally 9 followers on Instagram, but his blog is visited thousands of times every month. And he has had a ton of conversions with us just through the blog. So we have a couple of folks like that. Some of our sleep consultants will use Facebook primarily and not Instagram. So it's not common. The majority of our folks definitely have a presence on Instagram, but we do work with some that just have a blog or a Facebook presence.
What I think is amazing about Slumber Pod and just your guys' program in general is that you guys are such a great example of not sticking necessarily with one platform, right? Like you're just kind of taking it where it
comes. The merrier.
Yeah. Whether it's blogs or word of mouth, which I think is really key. All right. Excellent. Now, do you use your audience reports on all of your influencer prospects, or is it just some of them when you're trying to vet them a little further?
I would say I typically use them if we don't already know the influencer. And I say no, you know, loosely. A lot of the folks that reach out to us, we already are aware of because other of our influencers have mentioned them, or we follow them, or they follow us. And so for those folks, I don't always look at the audience insight because I feel like I already have a good idea of whether or not they're going to be a good fit. If it's somebody new that we have not had any interaction with, then yeah, I always look at that audience insight just so I can make sure that it's a good fit.
Follow-up question to that. In the audience insights reports, do you have go-to metrics that you look at when you're doing that influencer evaluation?
Yeah, so I always look at what their engagement rate is and want it to be over 2%. And then I always look at the page where you can see their other sponsored posts. And I look at what the engagement has looked like on the sponsored posts because, you know, sometimes if people are doing like 3 sponsored posts a week, then each post gets like 3 comments, even if they have a whole bunch of followers. And so those are the two big ones that I look at. I also look at
the credibility score.
It's not a hard and fast rule. You know, if somebody is under the 80%, that it, you know, it shows up in green or whatever, but I do consider that. And if somebody's credibility score is very low, then that's generally a no.
Well, and I think that you bring up a really good point is it's it's not hard and fast. Well, the intention behind any of the data is really to let it tell you the story, mm-hmm. not to yeah. determine the outcome, right? So, you mm-hmm. know, you taking a look at a variety of different metrics, and then I think it leans mm-hmm. to the gut that we were talking about it during right. the webinar, right? Your gut plays into whether or not this could be a potentially great influencer or not.
Right. And I will say too, it depends as well about what the goal is with that influencer. And I mentioned, you know, in the webinar that the majority of what we're looking at this point is conversions, but occasionally someone will reach out to us and, you know, they don't have a lot of followers or their engagement rate is not really high, but they have beautiful lifestyle imagery. We might work with them because we know that through Grin, you know, they'll have to sign their release, and we would love to have great, beautiful photos of Slumberpod to use. Or, you know, if somebody approaches us who has a ton of followers and we're like, okay, for this person, we're really just, you know, wanting brand awareness, then we might be a little bit more flexible in terms of those metrics.
Perfect. Now, do you require your influencers to have at least 10K followers so that they have a swipe up on Instagram stories? And I think that you mentioned that you guys don't really use affiliate links.
We really don't. When influencers post in stories, we tell them to just use our regular web address as the swipe up and then make their discount code very bold, very clear in their stories. We generally wait until somebody gets up to 10,000 followers. I've created a tag within Grin for micro influencers, which for us, we consider anybody under 10,000. When somebody applies and they're under 10,000, I typically leave them as a prospect, tag them with micro influencers, and then can go back to that list as needed. And we try to do like one a month that's a micro influencer, okay. just to give those people an opportunity. And because I know that sometimes those folks are much more willing to promote again and again and again without additional payment. So generally, yes, we stick over 10,000, but one a month we typically do under, and we keep those people on a separate list and sort of pull from there as needed.
Excellent. How do you find influencers that really resonate with your brand if influencers or any prospective influencers that you're looking for have different content, you don't know their audience and what their motivations are? So how do you find influencers that can resonate with the brand? Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. So the great thing is that the majority of our influencers approach us. So we don't do a ton of outreach. And that means that the people that we're vetting tend to already be familiar with our brand and want to work with us and have been able to articulate in our application process why they want to work with us, what they like about the product, what they like about the brand. So that makes it a little bit easier for us. I think because we generally don't offer compensation, we avoid some folks that their primary motivation is to just maximize with as many sponsorship deals as possible. And we say that on our application page that, you know, if you're under 100,000 followers, we generally will not offer compensation above product and commission. And I think that has helped to weed out some folks whose motivations may not be aligned with what we're looking for. And then I think part of it is just the conversation with the influencer. You know, so much of the process is streamlined through Grin, where, you know, I send them a link, they fill it out, I can send them an email template, whatever. But I try to have a conversation with the influencer in there somewhere as well to really get to know them and talk to them about when they're going to be using this product and how they think it's going to benefit them and how they heard about us and all of that. So that's been helpful. I will also say that we haven't used any sort of marketplace. I know some brands will use like Popular Pays or those other sort of boards where you can post campaigns and people can apply. We haven't used apps or sites like that because we want to avoid getting flooded with folks who are just interested in a free product or just interested in a payment.
Well, you bring up a really good point. I think that that's definitely a distinct difference between, you know, the Grin platform and other marketplace platforms. I think that some people, when they first sign on, marketplaces are a little bit easier to get the yeses, but that is because they act as job boards, as like, hey, I'm either paying or giving you something, who wants it? So who wouldn't say yes? But whereas Grin, it's very open, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it allows you to really target, which is, I think, really beneficial.
Absolutely. Now, the first time trying out your affiliate program, did you have a budget set or did you just run with it?
That's a great question. Yeah. So I can only speak to what was in place when I joined the team. So, and I joined about 6 months ago. So I don't know what the plan was when they first got it off the ground. But since I have been here, we've had a set budget every month. And that budget includes product cost, any sort of compensation that we may provide, but does not include commission. So it's just the budget for, you know, how much product we can send out for that month, which then determines how many influencers we can work with.
Do you change the number of influencers that you work with on a regular basis? And if so, is that weekly, monthly, quarterly?
We typically don't. We average roughly 20 to 25 influencers a month in terms of who is actively promoting us that month based on who has received a product that month.
Okay. Now, this question says, we are a young brand, and at what stage in your business would you guys recommend to offer promo codes? From the get-go? Mm-hmm. Should they wait a little bit?
So up until September of 2020, we only offered promo codes to our sleep coaches. We did not offer promo codes to our Instagram influencers. That worked well for us for a while until we realized that we needed a way to track and assess the success of the influencer. So yeah. When our goal was brand awareness, it was totally fine to not have discount codes because we knew that just by nature of posting, that influencer was going to create brand awareness for us. When we switched to wanting the goal to be conversions, we introduced promo codes to everybody so that we could track who was most successful in meeting that goal of conversions.
Yeah, that makes sense. How many times do you recommend an influencer posts a month for your brand, specifically for in-feed paid posts? And I believe that you don't do paid posts, correct?
No.
So how, and I think that you broke this down during the webinar, but if you could just give us a brief recap on when you're asking your influencers to post, how much are you asking them to post?
Mm-hmm. So we ask them to do a series of 3 story slides. And that is the only thing that we require of them up front, just a single series of 3. We do have that sort of condition in our agreement that if that series of 3 stories doesn't result in at least 4 conversions, that they post a second series of 3 stories at no additional charge. That's what we're currently working with. I said in the podcast, that's sort of malleable and we're trying to figure out if we should be asking more from folks, if we should be potentially working with fewer influencers, but paying some of them to do in-feed posts versus just the stories. Something we're sort of like mulling over right now is how much of that we want to change.
Well, and I think that you bring up a good point. I think it depends on really the objectives that you have for your campaigns, mm-hmm. right? So if you wanted to get more in feed so that you can repurpose that content and leverage mm-hmm. that even further, then maybe right. that's like a completely separate campaign. I think mm-hmm. there are just so many ways to just play around with the campaigns. Yeah. There's definitely no mm-hmm. one size fits all when it comes down right. to it. What I'm wanting to better understand is mm-hmm. when you ask them to post the other in-feed or the stories, how much direction are you giving to mm-hmm. the influencer on what they're posting? Are you posing a question that they're supposed to answer or is it a free-for-all? What kind of direction do you give them?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. So as part of the campaign, when they're submitting their proposal for the campaign, they have to agree to follow our influencer collaboration guidelines. And within okay. that document, it gives them some parameters of what we want them to include, what we definitely want them to avoid, specific language to use. Obviously, make sure to tag us. You know, don't show your baby in the slumber pod outside because it's only safety tested for indoor use, like that sort of thing. So we give them guidelines. But then other than that, we pretty much let them run with it. That's worked well for us. I can think of one instance where I'm like, I wish we could have vetted that before that got posted. But generally, the guidelines are a good framework for people to operate within, it seems.
So I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this because I know that you guys had just an existing mm-hmm. program and you walked into this, but this is question 1 of 2 questions. How okay. did you get your first 10 influencers?
Oh, so I will tell you what I know, which is that some of our first influencers were the children of our co-founder Lou. So she has six kids.
Oh my goodness.
And I know, I can't even fathom it. And Katie, our other co-founder, is one of them. So they're a mother-daughter team. Some of the most conversions that we have, even today in our groom database, are two of her kids. I don't know. I don't think they have like crazy huge Instagram accounts, but they were talking it up somewhere. So there's that. And then SlumberPod also ran a Kickstarter back in 2018, which generated a lot of buzz, a lot of interest. They far exceeded the goal that they had set for that. And my guess is that people started coming out of the woodwork at that point, wanting to be included in the momentum there.
Here's part two. How did you convince influencers to collaborate on a commission model? To me, they always tend to ask for an upfront fee.
This goes back to the fact that the majority of the influencers that we work with have reached out to us. And it just gives us the leverage to say, you know, these are our terms. If you're not interested, that's fine. We've got somebody else. And also, the product itself is expensive enough that providing the product saves them a lot of money. I get the very distinct sense that if these folks were not working with us, they would have purchased the product otherwise. And so that product payment for them, the product exchange, is a meaningful amount of saved money, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
As well as, like I said, having it known on the application fee, like this is our policy about payment and we're not going to pay under a certain follower account. And, you know, letting people sort of opt out if that's not something that they're interested in.
Yeah, I'm always encouraging brands of the exact same thing that you just mentioned, which, you know, you feel that your advantage is that you have a lot of people coming in and requesting it, but I feel like there is power behind saying, no, this is the type of program that we have in place. If you don't like these terms, then it's not
We're
the
not
right
gonna
fit.
fit.
Yeah, it's not the right fit. And I'm a strong believer of like saying it like that too. It's just not the right fit. We'd love for you to be part of the program.
Yeah, it's not malicious. It's not, you know, oh, we don't want to be fair with your time or whatever. It's just, you know, this is how we operate. And I also think it's been helpful for us having a set commission amount, a fixed amount versus a percentage. I think sometimes with the percentages, especially if you're not looking at a product that's very expensive, you're trying to motivate your influencer to work for like $1.60, which is a lot harder to do than if, you know, if you have a fixed rate and can say, I guarantee you that, you know, if this person makes any purchase, you're going to get at least $10. That can be helpful too.
Which actually, that's a great start to the next question, which is why did you offer your affiliates a $10 per order versus a tiered commission approach?
To be honest, I'm not entirely sure. That's just the number that the team came up with in terms of looking at what makes sense with the profit margin. And I will say that the manufacturer price of our product is a larger percentage of the sales price than what is typically preferred. And that's because the material of our product has to be really specific and high quality to make it breathable and also blackout. And so there's no real way to cut corners there. So because of that, I think our profit margin is a little bit narrower. And so for us, $10 was just sort of that sweet spot of it felt like enough that it would motivate influencers to promote, but not so much that it was going to really eat into the profit margin more than made sense to have the sale on the discount code.
Well, and you have to start somewhere, right? I would imagine that if $10 didn't work, like at that point, what
Oh
if we upped
yeah,
it a little bit
absolutely.
more?
Yeah, and truly until September of this past year, it was $5. And we were having success with $5. And so we moved it up to 10 when we released sort of the 2.0 version of SlumberPod, which is a little bit more expensive. But yeah, we had talked back in the day when I first started about potentially doing a tiered approach where, you know, once you hit a certain number of conversions, then we increase your commission payout after that. But at this point, we've had so much success with the fixed rate that it feels like it's not broken. So why fix it?
let's not fix it. There's nothing to fix. Right? Yeah. What are the typical discount code values? Is it like $5, $10? Like, what's the discount code value?
If we're not doing any sort of sale like Black Friday, Cyber Monday, it's $20 off. And then occasionally we'll increase that. For Black Friday, Cyber Monday, we increase the discount amount to $30 off. Later this month, we will be increasing to $25 off for a period of a week, but generally within that range. And I will say we do also offer some increased discount codes for like families who have twins, for example, and they want to purchase two, or, you know, if they're a repeat customer or whatever else, but just sort of standard influencer codes, it's always $20 off.
Next question. Love the BFCM strategy. How long were the majority of those influencers a part of your program? I'm curious to know how warm their audiences were to your brand so that they were ready to buy come BFCM.
That's a great question. That's a great question. So the majority of the influencers that participated in that promotion have been with us at least probably 4 to 6 months. In all likelihood, their followers had heard of Slumber Pod at least once before when they did their initial promotion. So this was a second, at the very least, a second promotion of the product. For some of our top influencers for that campaign, they have been posting about Slumber Pod for years in various, you know, iterations in their feed or in their stories. A lot of them will post about Slumber Pod organically every time they go on a trip or every time they go to grandma's house or whatever and share their stories. And so I think for sure the ones who are most successful had a really warm audience already. And then we're able to say like, this deal never comes around, go grab it. But even some of our, I'm thinking of one influencer in particular, she had only done 3 stories for us, you know, in our standard agreement. She had maybe 3 conversions. So, you know, that's good enough, whatever. And I don't know what she did, Black Friday or Cyber Monday, but I think she had 28 conversions just that weekend. And so there were definitely some front runners that were surprising to us. If you would have asked us beforehand in terms of like, who do you think is going to be the most successful for this promotion? There were people that we would have never thought. I do think it was helpful too. A lot of folks ran blog posts with like, these are the best Black Friday, Cyber Monday deals, and included Slumber Pod in that, which then, you know, some of that picked up organic traffic and whatever else. So definitely warm, but not necessarily as warm as you would think.
Not boiling if we're keeping on the cold to warm. So when you say that you have 300 influencers, is this 300 new influencers each month, or are you working with the same influencers kind of ongoing? Mm-hmm. So that's a great question because it definitely provides insight. I believe that it's 300 influencers that you have in total. Mm-hmm. How many active influencers do you have a month, and how many new ones do you bring on a month?
So you're right. We have 325 who are currently active in our program. We tend to bring on about 25 a month. And in doing so, we also try to archive about 25 a month. And our rule with archiving is that we archive anyone who hasn't had a conversion in the last 6 months. We let people know, even if they're outside of our sort of agreed upon campaign window, that if they want to keep promoting Slumber Pod and their code continues to be used, they can be an active influencer for us as long as they want. But, you know, we do have those people who have done their promotion and then they're done. And so we archive those people as they hit the 6 month mark with no conversions. So we try to keep it balanced around 300, but it does ebb and flow a little bit above and below.
That makes sense. I like that you have a checklist for archiving. I think that's definitely a process that is kind of not really thought of a whole lot, but I think it's important to know, like, all right, I'm going to put you on a shelf for a little bit.
And we let people know too, you know, I email them and say, hey, you've been archived. If you would like to remain active, let me know literally with a date when you plan to post again. And occasionally we'll get someone that's like, oh my gosh, I have loved being an affiliate. I totally forgot, you know, and they decide they want to post again next week. But
that's a great process.
Yeah. It's been great helping keep the numbers manageable, as well as creating sort of one last touch point to see if people are interested in promoting again on their way out.
Yeah. Now, were you able to mass change all the codes for your BFCM going from 20 off to 30 off and then change them back afterwards?
Yes. I literally was like awake at 11:59 the Thursday on Thanksgiving, waiting to change these codes. So if anyone's interested, you go to brands and then you go to discounts and then you go to manage codes and you select all and you click update discount amount. So it's very easy outside of, you know, making sure to do the change when you want the change to take effect.
Just to remember to do it, just to set your alarm. It should be
fine. Oh my gosh, I had like 5 alarms. I was like, I cannot forget to do this. And then obviously again, Cyber Monday at like 11:59. My only saving grace there is I'm on Central Time and the rest of the team is on Eastern Time. So it was really only 10:59 my time when everything, you know, went live.
Oh, see, there you go.
So it was doable.
That's hilarious. But so glad that you were able to make such a massive change at scale with like really push of buttons.
Absolutely. And Amy Rice, who was our GRIN, I don't even know what her official title was, but she was like our go-to helper, customer success manager,
yes,
maybe.
Customer success manager.
Okay, that's right. That sounds more official than helper. But so she was able to walk me through that process because for a hot second, I was like, do I need to go in everybody's profile and update the discount amount? And I was like, that is not going to be doable for 300 people. And she was like, no, you just do this, this, and this, and have that functionality. And I will say, I can't think of a time where I have asked the GRIN support team how to do something. And they're like, sorry, you just can't do that. There's always been, you know, an easy situation, an easy fixing GRIN. And it's just a matter of, you know, somebody showing me where it is.
It's definitely a good balance of being able to be flexible with everybody's workflow, right? Mm-hmm. Because every brand works within their program slightly differently, but also kind of having all the bells and whistles that are pretty consistent all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
How many influencers do you usually use a month at a time?
Mm-hmm. So in terms of influencers that we are actively sending products to and tracking them for content, 25. Of that 325 total, I would say on any given month, 100 of them will also post, you know, unprompted by us, likely so that they can see if they can rack up some commission money or whatever else. So I would say we probably have between 125 and 150 influencers that are posting a month, but only 25 sort of dedicated new influencers that have received product every month.
Do you put the ones who reach out to you in their own campaign so that you can ask them to repost for people who are requesting to be part of a program? Do you put them in a very specific campaign so that they're almost segmented out?
No. And I think that this probably functions differently than a lot of your users. We use 3 rolling campaigns. We have one that's for our affiliates, which is our sleep coaches and sleep consultants. We have one that we call the standard influencer campaign, which is product and commission. And then we have a campaign called influencer commission plus payment, whatever else. And so everybody just gets coded, you know, get sorted into one of those campaigns, and then I tag them to segment as needed. So we have not done an official, like even that Black Friday Cyber Monday was not a separate campaign in GRIN. I just went into our existing standard influencer campaign, selected everybody, bulk updated all of their discount codes. We have not done any sort of time-bound campaigns. I just used that progress feature in the campaign workroom and tags to sort of segment out based on who's new and who has stuff that's outstanding.
It sounds like then you use the tag management system in GRIN to really know who you need to reach out to as far as when they need to post again or if you need to follow them up.
Yes, as well as the relationship stage tool.
Yeah.
I use that as well for, you know, who is in talks versus who's been onboarded versus who's, you know, still needs outreach or whatever else.
It's tough to really keep all of the people who reach out and who are also ongoing organized. So it's great that you're able to leverage tools like the tag management and the relationship stage to really know who you're talking to before you talk to them.
For sure. And it's especially been helpful as we've added the pet product to our line, because the people, the influencers that we're talking to for the pet space are very different from the people that we're talking to in the baby space. And so it's been helpful to be able to tag and separate. And we actually do have a separate campaign for pet as well to try to keep them separated so that, you know, if I'm not just looking at our giant list of influencers, they're all interspersed. So that's been helpful.
Well, and they're different influencer types too. I mean, the best way to make those strategic decisions is to get like, to not muddy the waters with like, wait, is this a dog person or a person person?
Gosh, I know. Like, this person has a baby and a dog. Like, and we have had a couple of folks who have promoted both. We have sent them both the pet product and the baby product. And I think actually the cover image that you used for our webinar was one of our influencers who we sent both products, and they took some really cute photos of their baby and their dog in their respective slumber pods. But
see, that's perfect. Their content,
the gift that occasionally it overlaps.
This is great. Any tips on wording or phrasing the requirements when asking for guaranteed posts in exchange for gifting? How do you ask for that?
It's tough. And I think at the end of the day, our brand, like any brand, occasionally has someone that ghosts us, you know, after we've sent the product, after they have agreed to the guidelines. We try to be really clear in our guidelines that this is an exchange. It's not a gift necessarily, you know, where we're providing the product in exchange for their content. Yeah. And we tend to be really straightforward and firm, but not unkind, like in our language, that like this, these are your expectations, and we require them to accept that they have read and agreed to those expectations before we send them out a slumber pod. If we send them the slumber pod and then, you know, we can't get a hold of them or they totally ghost or whatever, we will follow up with and email them with a prepaid shipping label and say, hey, you know, essentially you agreed to this, to these terms. You know, we haven't been able to get in contact with you. We haven't been able, you know, we don't have a record of you posting. Here's a prepaid return label. We would appreciate you returning the slumber pod since you weren't able to follow up with your end of the deal. Generally, everybody posts then. Occasionally we will also, you know, we're part of a big network of entrepreneurs. Slumber Pod was on Shark Tank last January. So now we're also a big part of the Shark Tank community. And we will also let people know that we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs that do influencer marketing, and that there's a list of influencers that we advise brands not to work with, which feels a little bit like blackmailing, but it's also like out of in good faith. I don't want these people that are coming to us for advice or insight to work with somebody who's going to rip them off. And if that's the way this person's going to do business, then like, this is simply the natural consequence of that choice that they made. So ideally we don't have to go those routes often. We try to be really clear up front that like, this is an exchange-based agreement and, you know, we're giving you this in exchange for that.
That makes sense, really teeing it up as an exchange rather than a product gift. And I definitely think that there's a time and a place for product gifting for sure.
Oh my gosh,
like if,
example. And we absolutely do that sometimes with no expectation of anything in return. But the majority of our influencers, we ask them to indicate that they have read and agree to our guidelines, which includes that sort of exchange language.
Now, do you send the guidelines within the campaign brief, or is that a separate email before they even get into the campaign? Mm-hmm.
So we have some of that language in the sort of general application landing page. Mm-hmm. But then when they submit a proposal for the campaign itself and where they request the product, we have that attached in that sort of other information section. Yeah. And have added a field in the campaign proposal stage where they have to mark that they have read it and agree.
And then for clarification for listeners, there is a campaign brief within the campaign workroom in Grin that tees up everything that an influencer needs to know before starting a campaign with a particular brand. That includes the tasks, you know, the hashtags and handles and the content rights and the contracts and the guidelines. So all of that is really bundled up within Grin so that the influencer then gets what we call a live URL, which is a campaign URL.
So helpful.
So no one has to go back to like their email back and forth. Like the influencer journey, I really feel like is very positive from that perspective as well too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just having it all in one place and also being able to set up their payment information in that same live URL, being able to track their conversions, like everything is right there, which is so great.
This is really great. And I'm very curious what your answer is here, especially being a Grin user. So let's say you have no influencer program right now, zero zilch. Do you recommend Grin to start building the program from zero, or would you recommend it for someone that has, you know, a few more influencers under their belt?
That is a great question. And I can, I'll give you sort of two sides, both sides of my thought process here. Okay. On the one side, Grin has so much functionality, which is why it's a decent monthly investment. And so if you're not bringing in a ton of revenue from influencers, that monthly investment might feel high. I would say before anybody jumps into using Grin, I would want them to do like a really, really deep sort of market dive in terms of whether they are very sure that they can build a successful influencer program. I wouldn't want them to jump into Grin, you know, and to pay that monthly rate when they're like, oh, maybe we'll try this. Sort of on the flip side, there are so many things that Grin provides that would have been so helpful for us to essentially like do right from the beginning. It would have saved us so much time, so much effort in how we used to be operating the program. And I think it also would have helped us to get clearer faster on those success metrics and to really like lean into what was working well. And in that sense, you know, time is money, and that's money that we lost essentially before we switched to Grin and before we realized the changes that we would want to make to track things a little better so that we could use that data to make data-driven decisions about how we're operating and all of this. I don't know how to wrap that up nicely, but I would say, yes, if you feel confident that you can have a very successful influencer marketing program, starting with Grin is a great way to make sure you're doing it right from the start and to make sure that you are being efficient with your time as you set up the program. And if you're an entrepreneur, time is pretty much, you know, your hottest commodity. And so if you can use that time to bring in revenue to pay for Grin, absolutely. That's a worthwhile trade-off.
Well, and I also think that the key thing is, and you brought up a really good point, is influencer marketing something that you're going to want to do regardless of having Grin or not? That to me is one of the key questions that anybody has to answer when they're looking at like, all right, is this the right tech tool that I want? Also, Grin is not something that is a set it and forget it. That's not the intention. It's just kind of like the right tool in the toolbox to do the job that you need to minimize the busy work so that you can focus on the things that really matter, that give you that brand awareness, that drives up your revenue, that really gives you that return on investment. So I think that that's one key thing. And then the other one is really having someone to man the ship. Like, it doesn't get done by itself. Like, there are hours that you've put into it to grow it to be what it is now. And that's the case with any brand.
Yeah, I think that is important to point out that Grin streamlines a lot of this stuff, but it's absolutely not set it and forget it. It still requires a lot. And especially for us, because we've made it a priority, it requires a lot of really nurturing of the process if you want it to feel more personal and more human. Because certainly you could get everything set up sort of on autopilot in Grin. You would still need somebody, you know, clicking through to send the email templates or whatever else. It's a tool. It's not a program in and of itself, a tool that your program manager is going to have to use. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard this really great quote from Kate Chernice from a tool called Lately. She says, the right tool will get you to third pace, but the person has to bring it all the way home, right? So it doesn't do all the things. Yeah, for sure. We have a few more questions and then I will set you free. How did you come up with the idea to start working with sleep coaches for your canopy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think largely it was just thinking about who our ideal customer is and who interacts with our ideal customer the most. And for us, it was obvious that there were these people that were working with our ideal customer already. And, our ideal customer being moms for whom really quality sleep is important. And so Yes. It was just sort of an obvious fit. I think as folks in that sleep coach community got word of it, they also started approaching us wanting to partner and wanting to, write for our blog and whatever else. So it's been a really sort of mutually beneficial relationship and has allowed us to reach really, really clearly aligned customers.
What best practices do you have in place to keep promo codes from being publicized on coupon sites? And how do you handle the situation when one does get out there?
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit in the webinar, but we really don't do much proactively or reactively. It hasn't happened too very often. When it does happen, we just consider it that's another conversion that we have made. That's another sale that we have made. And we're thankful for the sale, essentially. As I mentioned in the webinar, I think it's also been crucial for us that the folks whose discount codes have been picked up by those sites are folks that we have a relationship with and who we feel strongly didn't submit their code to these sites to try to pad their commissions. We know that these sites are crawling the internet, looking for codes that they can pick up. And a lot of our codes are used in blog posts and things like that because we generally don't use links. And so we've sort of just taken the approach that it's a part of the game for using discount codes is that sometimes they'll show up on those sites.
All right. Do you tier your commission rates based off of the two groups, moms versus sleep coaches, as the reach is different?
No, we don't. Everybody gets the same commission rate. And honestly, even though the reach is smaller from the sleep consultants, they tend to be more successful in terms of conversions simply because their audience is so specific to our ideal client. So, and I also think, we have wanted to create a culture where, I guess I'll backtrack a little and say that in the influencer world, it can feel hierarchical based on how many followers you have and how much reach you have and how much money you can command. And we've really tried to create a culture that sort of anybody who wants to promote Slumber Pod is of equal worth to us. If you are passionate about the brand and you're sharing about it with people that could become customers of us. And I think that has really benefited us as we, as we nurture those relationships. And we've seen a good response from that approach, where some of our best, most highly converting influencers are small compared to, what you'd expect and what some of our others command in terms of reach.
And the passion, I think that we've talked about it earlier. It's mm-hmm. the authentic passion that someone has to talk about your brand. It increases mm-hmm. word of mouth, and that increases brand awareness.
Absolutely.
It increases revenue. The whole nine yards. It's definitely all connected. Okay, so I don't have a final question. I have a final comment that I want to make sure that gets shared. Someone said, "We love ours. They're Slumber Pod. We own two." So thanks, Elena from Baby Brew, who shared that as well. I thought that would be a great way to round it out.
Mallory, we love to hear that.
I know. Isn't that great? You definitely got a user. She was probably really excited to see Slumber Pod come up on the webinar list. So I'm so thankful for you taking so much time. We had so many great questions and you were incredibly helpful sharing your insights. I hope to have you again as a guest so that we can, just talk about other things too.
Sure. I can talk about this forever.
Exactly. We'll just grab a cup of coffee and sit down and talk. Well, thank you again, awesome. Mallory, so much. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity.
I hope that you gained lots of insights from all of Mallory's answers. It's always so great to hear from marketers who are in the trenches of influencer marketing and really learn from their story. If you want to hear more, be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Also, leave us a rating and a review. If you're interested in watching the Slumber Pod Fireside Chat or other brands that we have featured in the past, like Loom Cube, Organifi, Trifecta, Tubby Todd, and more, visit the live events section at grin.co. That's grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.